during the annual meetings of the World Bank and the IMF, the key thing that was on the line, especially for countries in Africa, was the need for African countries, many of which are not as exposed, given that most banks in Africa hold their loans on their balance sheets. They do not have a derivative market, and they also have a very small secondary market, for secondary financial market. So because of this, the attention was being drawn to African countries to make sure that they continue to work on the macroeconomic stability issues and continue to work on inflation issues and ensure that growth continues to benefit the poor, because they are looking at the possibility of the dwindling of foreign direct investments and also of remittances from migrants abroad, which last year for Africa was $20 billion. This money goes directly to family members, so this is money that really has a huge impact on poverty reduction. And to the extent that these migrant workers were to lose their jobs in rich countries, it could very negatively impact the poor, not necessarily banks, because the money just transits through banks.
Well, now that the bailout seems to be boosting investor confidence upward, as it has on the stock markets around the world over the last 24 hours, triggering a return to lending and better credit, can African countries feel more confident that some of their newly earned pledges of aid and debt cancellation will be fulfilled?
It is a very good sign for African countries, the bulk of whom, again, I say, were not likely to be as badly hit as we had seen in other countries, except for South Africa and Nigeria. The two of them represent 54% of Africa's GDP. But these countries, given their links to the international markets, were going to be badly hit. The rest of Africa is not so much connected with international aid. But the fact that things have happened well and that the bailout package or rescue package seems to be working well, it's a lot of good news for countries that are dependent on aid, and many of them are dependent on aid for more than one half of their budget.
What signals can the World Bank and IMF send out this week to donor countries not to neglect their promises to help bring relief to impoverished countries?
The president of the World Bank has said that the global financial crisis should not hide the major humanitarian crisis that has been ongoing for a long time, and the food and fuel problem has been major for Africa, in a region where most people spend 50% and above of their income just trying to find what to eat, and in a region where since 1995 the number of the poor has almost doubled again in spite of support. So the World Bank has been very insistent on countries honoring their Gleneagles promises to provide at least $50 billion in aid to Africa every year.
Now, are banks in need of rescue, just like lending institutions and financial institutions all around the world, because of this crisis?
I would answer for Africa just to say that the impact of the crisis remains limited and most likely unseen for now. I think that the danger had been that had this persisted, then we were going to see that kind of trouble. That will be with the exception, perhaps, of Zimbabwe, which is, as you know, a very exceptional case with 11% inflation.
What is the most urgent credit concern of African banks, given the amount of weak financial position that international lenders and investors are displaying in recent weeks?
The chief economist of the Africa region at the bank has indicated that one of the biggest dangers for the troubles for the banks in Africa could be the fact that most banks have international shareholders, some of whom are these banks in rich countries. So to the extent that they are very negatively impacted by the problems, the credit crunch in the West, this may have a secondary effect on African countries, which secondary effect at this moment, I say, is not yet visible.
You spoke of the problems that the larger African economies, such as Nigeria or South Africa, might be having because of the world crisis. Can you predict whether they will still be able to carry out their role in helping other more needy African countries recover from some of the immediate poverty needs that they've been fulfilling to stop problems from spilling over their borders?
I believe that the chief economist for the Africa region has been pointing out that Nigeria and South Africa are major investors elsewhere on the continent, supporting also in peace-building initiatives. And these countries, we don't expect that they will be pulling out of markets in Africa. The section of the bank that works on regional integration is pushing for stronger support for regional integration programs, which basically would expand the space for bigger countries to act as a growth pole. because with the average economy just slightly above $4 billion in most African countries, that is not an economy on which you could get economies of scale. So the idea is to continue to push. But we have seen recently that countries like Ghana, like Gabon, have issued euro bonds and have raised money in the international market using those bonds to be able to build infrastructure projects. And a country like Kenya and Tanzania, we're planning to do so. We believe that if the financial crisis continued, that could compromise those kinds of bonds. But still, because of the huge improvements that are happening on the continent, both the crisis, whether it is the food and fuel crisis or the credit crisis, are opportunities for Africa as well.
Well, over the weekend, World Bank President Robert Zoellick said that the bank has a $1.2 billion fund to help countries cope with the impact of high food prices. How is this proposal being received by African leaders? Is it considered a drop in the bucket, or is it expected to have widespread impact on soaring food costs?
This is a major initiative in the sense that it's got the emergency aspect to begin, and a number of countries across Africa have already begun to receive this money to deal with the urgent needs of feeding their population. The second part of this has to do with the midterm and the longer-term issues, which really deal with boosting agricultural productivity, dealing with issues of land ownership, arranging issues of irrigation, ensuring post-harvest conservation, transformation, and transportation to markets. So this is a significant initiative. Obviously, it needs to be expanded because some of the issues on the continent are linked to access to enriched seeds or to fertilizers. So I think African governments have received it very well, and they're looking forward to more support from the bank.
There is also a $2.7 billion energy fund being drawn up to help countries plagued by power shortages and weak infrastructures to get their economies moving again. Tell us the impact of this initiative that it's expected to have.
This initiative supports another initiative for the African continent, which was called Lighting Africa. The bulk of it is really supporting small communities to get electricity through sources that are cleaner, that are greener for the environment, but also that free up the bulk of the electricity produced so that it can be used for industrial production. So small communities driven by essentially solar and wind power. And the big bulk of the resources that are coming up now are expected to support bigger projects, such as the one on the Inga in the Democratic Republic of Congo, for which the Congolese government is trying to mobilize $80 billion.